Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earl, and here are today's topics. Barcelona failing to advance past the group stage for the first time in 21 years after falling to Bayern Munich and Benfica defeating Dynamo Kiev. Chelsea conceding three goals at Zenit, to finish second place overall in Group H behind Juventus. Manchester City's defeat to RB Leipzig and Kyle Walker's costly red card. Manchester United clinching first place in Group F after their draw with Young Boys. Liverpool finishing perfect in Group B after eliminating AC Milan, and Everton's important comeback victory over Arsenal in the Premier League. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. Wow, Robbie Earl, that's a lot of topics, my friend. That's a lot of topics, a lot of things that's happened over the last few days. Of course, a big couple of days in the Champions League. And we're going to start with, I got to say, I watched this game, a pretty poor game, but probably the biggest story. Bayern Munich 3, Barcelona 0. They haven't qualified for the group stage. It's the first time in 21 years, of I've just said in the topics there. Yeah. And, God, talk about Bayern Munich in second gear, way too much quality, attacking thrust, some really good goals from experienced, proven top players against the Barcelona side that is just a sad reflection of what it used to be, Rob. And Xavi, the manager now, only I think his fifth or sixth game in charge of this football club, great football club, was such a brilliant midfield player. Just watching him on the sidelines in the snow coming down, it's just, this is such a difficult job, Rob, based on what they're doing right now in La Liga, based on big financial problems, based on couldn't afford to keep little Messi, sold other great players, a youth and experienced looking team that's just kind of, it's a sad reflection of a great club right now, whereas Bayern Munich is just, purring, mate.
Yeah, pretty much the opposite, really, when you see, you know, you look at Barcelona, and I think we all just, when we think of the Champions League, and obviously as it's moved from the European Cup in, you know, to the more modern day Champions League, we think of Barcelona as being one of those teams who holds a special place in the competition for what Pep did, for those teams, for the football that was played. I think we all think of the great name and the great club, but at the moment, Rob, they're an average team. I've looked at the table, La Liga, they're seventh in La Liga.
Yeah.
They lost 1-0 to Real Betis this weekend. Why would we think that they could, you know, go to Bayern Munich and get a result? It's not going to happen. That's where they are. Xavi's come back, one of their greats. It's one of the most difficult times in the club's history. And it's also, Rob, reflective of, in some respects, Spanish football. Spanish football is no longer the powerhouse that it used to be. The Premier League, I believe, has stepped into that spot in terms of, you know, the quality of players, the quality of managers, the quality of football that's being played. And I don't think there was any surprise, really, in what happened today, to the point where I'd almost go and say they don't even, Rob, for me, possibly start as favourites in the Europa League. That's how far this fall has come.
Yeah, well, they'll drop into that competition from now on in. And it's, kind of making my notes through this game, Rob, and actually in the first 20, 30 minutes before Bayern scored their first goal, I think it was Thomas Müller in around 34 minutes, they played okay. But again, Bayern Munich weren't really that bothered. There's no fans in the stadium, of course, they're at Bayern Munich right now with the what's going on in Germany and Bavaria, of course, the area that Munich is in. Locked down again in some ways, no fans there. But as the game wore on and Bayern scored a couple of goals, you got no sense of panic or desperation from Barcelona, Rob. Like a very, like no fight, no belief that they could, you know, they had to win this game. And the lack of fight was pretty sad.
Are we at a stage, though, where both on and off the pitch now, this football club's not being run well? I mean, the finances seem to be the major issue. I mean, they lose Messi, they lose Suarez. I mean, when you're replacing them with Martin Braithwaite, even the name doesn't sound like he's going to be a great striker. You know, no disrespect to him. Memphis Depay and the likes. It's just a level below where. Are we talking about a club that's not being well run off the pitch financially and on the pitch in terms of what it can produce and what it can do?
Unfortunately, mate, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you have to think that's true, mate, given the financial problems. We know in Spain's La Liga, Real Madrid and Barcelona get a massive chunk of the TV money. They use that money and they borrow, beg and get more money to spend so much money on players. And that's why they've dominated that league. And in some ways, European football over the last kind of 10, 20 years, particularly Real Madrid of recent decades. So it is a bit strange how they dominate. There's no more, I mean, that's why they want the Super League. There's no more money. I mean, they get the TV deal is so, in the UK for Premier League, obviously, it's kind of fairly even split up throughout the teams. There's prize money and finishing money and bonus money. But for the most part, the main bulk of the money is split between the 20 clubs. Well, that's not. They get a bigger majority for that, which takes away competition in the league, Rob. Maybe takes away from it being a competitive league that people in Spain want to pay a ton of money for TV rights. I don't know. It's just, you know, when I look back and I watched this team win the Champions League final against Manchester United in 2012 at Wembley, watching Messi do what he did on that game and in subsequent matches, it's just a very sad reflection right now. Xavi, Iniesta and Lionel Messi were the star players, but there was also a ton of others that contributed. And, you know, Sergio Busquets still playing, Gerard Piqué still started this game as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just a sad day for Barcelona. They jump into the Europa League. But just swinging back to Bayern Munich, Rob, I mean, they're going to be right up there. There's no question. The quality they've got going forward, Leroy Sané's strike, I don't know if you saw it on the highlights quick after the game today. Of course, we're recording this just after the game's finished on the Wednesday. He hit a flip. I just a massive fan of Leroy Sané.
He's a talent, isn't he? Yeah, we saw that. We saw some of that. And it's interesting, Rob, that I kind of took two views of the nostalgia of of Barcelona, what they've been, what they've produced, the standards they've set in Europe. You talked about those teams through, you know, from the 2010 through to the 20 under Pep. They were dominant. They set the standard of football. They changed the way that people looked and thought about football, as Pep's continued to do in the Premier League. But I also thought there's probably a group of people, a set of clubs who, in some respects, a bit like, well, welcome to our world now. It's not always, you're not always going to have the biggest money. You're not always going to be able to have the biggest fans. And the one that stands out to me, Rob, is Ajax. Ajax were a monster club back in the 70s and 80s, you know, with the football, total football and the Cruyff and what they delivered.
And the success players, in the Champions League.
The success that they had. Mm. And they've had to have a model now, Rob, where they go with young players, they develop players and they know they have to sell them. No, Xavi's got a group of young players with him now at Barcelona. They might have to cut their cloth accordingly and say, okay, we're going to play the right style of football. Listen, I'm not saying...
Yeah, that doesn't feel right, does it?
It doesn't feel right. But it's a model that they might have to start to mirror in some ways to get them back to where they hope to be. At some point, you believe the finances will come back. At some point, they'll be able to possibly compete again with the biggest team in Europe. But for where they are now, they might have to go down a more youthful, developing talent field than being able to buy these mega stars that we've had and play football in that way. Because, you know, there's plenty of clubs in Europe who will have, you know, been beaten 5 or 6 by Barcelona and gone, yeah, well, with all that money and all that, that's why they can do it. There'll be some clubs who won't be that sorry that it's happening now. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back and correct myself there, it was 2011 when Barca beat Man United at Wembley. And it was the year after, I remember I did that game as well at Munich, where Chelsea beat Bayern Munich in Munich in that game. Yeah, the only thing I suppose, Rob, Xavi, who's in charge of the team right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the guy that they all want there. Fair play to him because he's going in at maybe the most difficult time for 20 odd years. So I'm sure he'll be given time. I'm sure the fans will be patient with him. It's just the way things are right now. And they've got to try and regroup, sign some players, develop ones they've got there. Very difficult job. But, so that was kind of the big story. We had to lead with that because that's a big story. Two big teams. Yeah. I watched them today and it was just such a blimmin'. It's just a shell of a game. You know, no fans there. And Bayern Munich just cruising, going through the motion. Lewandowski, good. Konan, good. Thomas Müller again scores the goal. They're one of the favourites to win it again. Yeah. So we'll see.
It's bad for UEFA as well, isn't it? When one of those big-time, you know, big-hitting clubs doesn't make it into knockout stages, that's a loss for
yeah, but that's what I like. I don't mind it.
I'm saying it's modern football, and some of these younger younger clubs who are...
Smaller clubs are coming, are getting through.
Yeah, well played. Let's move on to the game this game for Chelsea away at Zenit St. Petersburg today, Rob. It was a Chelsea team that made lots of... I think it was 8 changes to the team that lost at West Ham at the weekend. Some through maybe illness and injury, some because Thomas Tuchel felt players needed to get a run out. It was a very different-looking team, Rob. If we just go from thought, Kepa in goal, Aspilicueta, Christensen and Saar as the 3 centre-backs. Hudson-Odoi and Saul played on the left-hand side as a left wing-back.
Wing-back, yeah.
With James, Rhys James and Ross Barkley as a centre too. So Rhys James, I think from his Wigan days, it played there. It looked a little bit like to me, like Mount was playing underneath a Lukaku and Werner front too. And it was, you know, a very different look to Chelsea. Maybe I'm seeing very different personnel. What do you think of this one? Chelsea conceding 3 goals a game. That's back-to-back games now. They've conceded 3 goals. Any slight worries for Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea?
Well, I think there is. I think there's slight worries based on the last games in the Premier League, Rob. This was such a different team. I mean, wow, different. And not surprisingly, they weren't very good. I mean, difficult to gel. Players playing in odd spots. Rhys James is such a talent. He can play in the middle of midfield, but I've never seen him start in there before. Saul, who struggled really with the pace of the quality that you need at Chelsea Football Club to be an effective player, played there. Werner's been out for a while. And also, Romelu Lukaku was an important start for him. On those two players, Rob, it's kind of weird because as I'm watching the game, I'm making notes like, wow, these two are short. They look a little bit rusty. Lukaku, definitely. Yeah. And I'll maintain that now. I mean, he's been out for a long time with this ankle problem, Rob. And he got his goal. Really good work from Timo Werner, but looked a little rusty, looked a little sluggish, came out, I think, 75 minutes out of the game. And Timo Werner initially was given the ball away. Honestly, just not very good. And then, of course, as games goes on, they come alive. Werner does really well for Lukaku. He scores a goal. He scores 2 goals and creates the other one, Timo Werner. But he wasn't playing that great before that. But listen, those numbers are great. And of course, he gets away with that. Mason Mount was his good quality self. But it was just a very, I don't know, disjointed Chelsea. Just not a normal Chelsea. You can see Thomas Tuchel on the sideline shaking his head, looking disappointed. But he made lots of changes. And that's what can happen. Of course, Juve beat Malmo 1-0, Rob. So Chelsea finished second in their group and could meet... You know, great chance they're going to meet a really, really good team from the other side who finished top of their group.
Bayern, Real Madrid, Ajax, I think, isn't it? Lille in their group, which is, could be a little bit costly. Could be. Now, listen, you're talking about the European champions, a team who, when they're at their best, tend to control the opposition. But I just wonder if there's a sense, and I was sort of doing a little bit of reading around with the kind of blogs and a couple of people thinking, and I thought to myself, it's just probably in the first time since he's been there, and we're talking like 12 months now, and he's won a Champions League, and he's had a team virtually near the top of the table since the start of the season, just dropped off at the weekend. But it's a little testing time now for Thomas Tuchel. They've got 1 or 2 injuries, and Kovacic has gone down with COVID as well, just got back to training, which is a big blow for him in the middle of the park. But some of those players who were... maybe fringe and hoping to come back. I'm thinking of Pulisic who got on. Werner, as you talked about, 2 goals and assist. Sometimes without totally convincing you, but let's just say the goals should be helpful to him. Ross Barkley, Saul. If some of those players have to have minutes, you know, Lukaku, we're talking about, is their number one striker, but looks like he needs a couple of games to get his sharpness. Might there just be a little bit of stuttering from Chelsea over the next few weeks?
Could be. I mean, the West Ham loss was a bit of a shocker. Conceded the goals there, conceded again today. I mean, the goal that went in late past Kepa, who actually made some big saves in the game pretty well, was a stunning kind of a volley into the roof of the net, which really, I mean, it looked like they'd come back and won. And then, well done Chelsea and well done this group of players and well done Werner and Lukaku and everybody else. But the late goal just is... what's happening right now for them. So it's a bit of a blip. We spoke on our last pod about Chelsea, Rob, whether they have figured it all out yet. I mean, of course, the Champions League victory was amazing last year, and their general form this year has been very good. But it's not, it's not, they're not going to run away with the Premier League. I mean, they're not right now. They won't be favourites for the bookmakers, I'm sure, to win it. I feel like it's a first semi-serious challenge for Thomas Tuchel, Rob. Blip. There's a bit of a, you know, even though it's a short blip, the results haven't been bad. And I was listening to, I think it was Ruben Loftus-Cheek today, Rob, was it, before the game, saying they haven't been playing bad. It's just the results haven't quite gone for them. But Zenit 3, Chelsea 3, Abramovich was there, I believe, in the stands watching the game. It's just a little bit of cause for concern. But there was a lot of changes. Players played, haven't played for a little while. Players playing out of position, so you understand it, but you still expect them to win. That being said, I thought Zenit were good. I thought Zenit knocked the ball around well. The couple of Brazilians that they've got, Malcolm and Claudinho, I think saw Claudinho in the Olympic Games for Brazil this summer. They were technical. They were pretty good. They're very good. So fair play to them. And Chelsea now got to, you know, have to see what the draw brings on Monday, I think. Is it the draw for the next round of 16?
You know, if that second place is going to be costly to them, they're going to face one of the big boys.
Yeah.
And they will all have to be the best once we get back in that competition. But obviously, they can put that aside till February now.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Manchester City. My friend who went away to Leipzig and got beat 2-1. Remember, I was watching this game and, again, a bit like the Chelsea game, I didn't think it started particularly well. Didn't think they had much rhythm to the game. Not sure if lack of fans in the stadium didn't particularly help them, but the atmosphere didn't feel right. Looked like a team who knew they were through. Hmm. Didn't have an awful lot to play for. A little bit appetite wasn't particularly there. No real hunger at the top end of the pitch. Thought Zach Steffen came out of it with a little bit of credit. Made a couple of important saves for his team when he needed to, but didn't think they defended particularly well. Rob, I thought their pressing wasn't anywhere near their best.
Yeah.
And I thought, a bit like Lukaku, I thought Kevin De Bruyne looks like he needs a game or two. He's suffered with COVID, and he's another who, you know, such a big part of what City are going to do and moving forward for the rest of the league, but not quite on the top of his game, as you probably would expect, having missed a few matches.
I saw Pep afterwards, Rob, because it's always interesting to see what he thinks when they don't play well. And I think we've seen this before from him. When the job is done, I think he's a little bit like that. You know, we've earned the right to have a bit of a, you know, a poor day. I think we've seen that before from his teams. I think we saw it again there. And they weren't. I mean, they're kind of like just not flat out playing this game.
No.
And when you're not at a team that's fired up and wants to beat you at home, you know, it's going to be difficult. I think the big talking point, Rob, isn't it? And we talked about it just before we came on, is Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
And a very strange decision, loss of head, like to lash out at the player when he's from behind. He gets the red card. Now he's going to miss at least one round of the round of 16, one of the legs. I think UEFA have to decide what kind of punishment.
One or two, it's a minimum of one. Yeah, could be two.
I mean, how slipping crazy, bad, unprofessional was that?
It just smacked it. Do you remember, I think it was about a year ago, Roy Keane on UK TV said he's a car crash waiting to happen. And I thought that was a bit harsh and a bit disrespectful.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been, has he?
Generally, he's been.
Not recently. You know,
whether for Man City or for England, where he's played right back or right sided of three centre backs, we haven't really seen that. So I'm not quite sure what warranted the reaction. What if there was something being said or gone on? Listen, we know all that stuff happens, but you're now a very experienced international defender who is hugely important for his football club, Rob.
Really,
in the days when you need to have a one-on-one, if you need to shut somebody down, as he did against PSG and the likes with an Mbappe and a Messi. Kyle Walker's the one defender you want around him. So I just think that's one of those things. I don't think Pep will hold against it, but I think it was always in your back of your mind that this guy under pressure could do something silly and give a penalty away in a semi-final of the Champions League that might hurt City down the road. And I just thought it was disappointing for Kyle Walker because it brings back then all that talk about his sometimes lack of control and his emotion has not always been in check. When I thought, in fairness, his performance have warranted better than that. And he's been in a really important... I thought he started the season really good form. and been very important for City. And in some respects, Rob, as I was thinking about it, and I know maybe they can put Cancelo there and Zinchenko to the other side, but it weakens City. He's the one guy defensively that weakens City. They've not really got a like-for-like replacement at right back.
No, he's very different. You know, sometimes, I don't know, it takes all types to make a team. His pace and recovery has been so useful so many times. Yeah. And Cancelo off the left-hand side can really get forward, and Kyle Walker can sit back and help the other two centre-backs. Works really, really well. Almost a three defensive line there. But no, so they're going to miss him. I also saw that Phil Foden, Robert, again, I just watched him for some quotes afterwards. He came off at halftime with an injury. But the reports I've seen is that it's not too bad and should be okay for the next game. But, you know, that's a concern. I mean, you look at the team, it's a strong team. It's just, they're at the top of the group. And
What I would say, just on the game, I was watching the game and looked at the front three. Yeah, it was Mahrez, Grealish and Foden. As a front three. Sterling came on at halftime for Foden, who we talked about, what they're not. Just another one where with Jack Grealish, where it just doesn't quite fall for him. You know, chances coming across the box, little things around the 18 box. It's just not knitting for him at the moment. And I just hope either he's perseveres and they can get him through it, or he can find a way to have what I call the Jack moment to inspire him. Because I just feel if he's not careful, a little bit of that arrogance and confidence and swagger that he has might go from his game. And that's an important part of who Jack Grealish is. I think that's part of why you're buying. I'm just a little concerned that, you know, either that or, you know, he doesn't play his way out of the team, but if he doesn't score enough goals, his numbers aren't good enough, you know, he gets overlooked, he gets on the bench, and then it's going to be tough for him to find a spot
Just following up on that, Rob, before we move on to Manchester United, do you think, because, well, I'll tell you what, the question is he going to persevere with Jack Grealish as a false nine? Because I kind of like it. I like the way he's more involved. I like the way he's closer to goal. I like the way he should get more potential to score goals. It's very easy in this squad, Rob, to put somebody else there, because so many of us have done it really well. Phil Foden's done it really well. He could easily just switch Foden and Grealish left to centre and just switch him back out again. But I think he obviously wants to give Grealish a run. I just hope he gives him another game or two.
Yeah,
I just don't think he will. What do you think? Do you think it's
I'm a little worried. I would like to see him, and that's why I'm hoping for a Jack moment, a Jack goal. You've got to produce in there, Rob. You've got to be scoring and assisting.
You get two or three games, probably.
Silva can go in there. We know what he does. Foden can play in there. Jesus can play in there. You talk of Ferran Torres, is not going to be that far away. He was doing really well in that ball. So all of a sudden, you know, there's a bit of a queue, and Jack needs to be at some point taking his chances when they come along. I think when you spend the amount of money that you did, he'll get opportunities, Rob. But, you know, what we know with Pep, if the numbers ain't there, you don't play in his team.
All right, my friend, let's go to the other team in Manchester. Manchester United 1, Young Boys 1, a much, much changed Manchester United side. Mm-hmm. Young Boys, absolutely. Young Boys everywhere. Young Boys with Man United as well. Young players coming in late to the game. I like it. I like the way the manager, Ralf Rangnick, is going to take a look at all the players, Rob, in different spots. Mason Greenwood with a brilliant, brilliant overhead or kind of a side volley goal from nowhere, really. Just again, shows the talent that he's got. And I think it's pretty difficult for us to figure out what's going on with Mason Greenwood, because we see a uber super talented player that's, I don't know, the England thing where he wants to focus on his domestic football, Man United, yet hasn't been playing. Mm. He's been playing in different spots. Had to go to Solskjaer, had him playing great as a striker. Then Ronaldo comes in, he gets pushed to the right-hand side. What do you think is going to happen with Mason Greenwood, Rob? Just on the manager, that I think this manager, like, he looks at everybody. I can see him playing up front with Ronaldo in the next game, because I think Greenwood would do a better job and is a more potential goal threat than Marcus Rashford in that spot, in my opinion.
And or Jadon Sancho. I'd agree, Rob. I thought he was the one that came out of today with his star shining. I think he was the one that have got into Ranieri's head and gone, wow. I heard about this kid. I know he can finish. He pressed well, Rob, when he didn't have the ball. Okay. He looked energetic. He looked like he was hungry. Obviously, his movement and his finish is outstanding. I was kind of thinking about him. I heard some debate about, you know, how good is Greenwood? How good could he be? You know, everyone's talking about he's the most natural finisher. And I was thinking, in a way, he's... he's Mbappe-esque in maybe not quite as quick. Mbappe's probably a little bit quicker and more powerful.
Yeah.
But he's got that similar silky, elusive movement. He's as good a finisher, I would say, as Mbappe. I think across both feet.
I think better finisher. Possibly. With his shooting ability around the box. Yeah.
You know, and I just think a talent like that, Rangnick might, I think, will enjoy bringing this young kid on. I think he's everything, the profile that fits of what Rangnick wants as a centre forward. And if it's next to Ronaldo, who might be not be able to close down as much, and you can stick into him, as you say, I think he brings you more goal threat than Rashford. I think he's has a better football IQ than Marcus Rashford in what you want from your front players. I thought he was the standout today. I thought if there's one big thing Rangnick got out of seeing everybody tonight, I think he's realised in Mason Greenwood he's got a proper player.
Donny van der Beek and Juan Mata, centre midfield players.
Yeah.
Diallo and Elanga, again, young players that the manager wants to look at. Are we going to see a little... I think we can't get any less, really, a feeling of Donny van der Beek. Is the new manager going to give him a run in the team, Robin, in central midfield? Because he can play. I thought he has moments today in the game where he dictates the play. He's comfortable on the ball. He wants the ball. He wants to play forward. He's got good energy. He'll close down. He'll pressure. You know, maybe not immediately, but do you think he'll force his way into the starting place?
I think with Rangnick, what it will be, and I get the sense with this guy, there's no grey. It's black and white. The pass, I think it was Van der Beek trying to play a pass into Wan-Bissaka that gave away for the first goal, I think it was. And he talked, I heard him do a press conference after the game, Rob, and he talked about, you know, we showed well, but then we get sloppy with our passing and we don't play forward enough. And I think with this guy, you've got to play how he wants you to play.
Yeah.
There's no risk. If there's risk in your passing, he doesn't want that in midfield because he said that they thought they gave a lot of ball away as the game went on and young boys got better and created more opportunities. So I think you're right. I think it might be part of the process. I get the sense he might have to drill him for a month of what he wants and how he wants him to play, but he can keep the ball. And in Rangnick's system and Rangnick's way of playing, he wants people, A, who are energetic, who can press, but who can keep the ball. Because if you don't keep the ball, all that system goes out and it makes you a lot more vulnerable. So, again, he's another I think he had a look at. I'm pleased that the manager took a look at those people like him. I suppose he's heard and seen of Jesse Lingard. I think he did himself a huge load of favours tonight, and whether he's going to be one that might be surplus to requirements in the window, whether he'll allow him out the door or not.
Yeah, it's tough to think where he would play.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it's like, if it's going to be the same system, is he a wide player? Not really. He's, you know, he's not going to play as a centre forward, as a front two. Is he going to play as one of the two in the middle of midfield? Probably.
If I'm Rangnick, though, Rob, I've got to be honest, I'd keep him. If it was me for 6 months and at my job to get the best out of Manchester United, I think these days and jobs where I can trust Jesse Lingard to go and do me a job. And in that regard, listen, if I use him five times in the next 6 months, but it's the five times I need him that help me win games or help me see out games or get me back into games, I personally, if I was Rangnick, wouldn't be putting him out the door now. I'd wait till the summer when we can have a look at everything and see what I've got. I mean, if you've got a decent player who's committed to the cause and wants to do well, wants to play, I'd hang on to him.
I think he might go, listen, I think given that attitude, it's worth hanging on to the end of the season and see how he might fit in. If he doesn't play a lot by the summer, I think he should go. I think he should cash in the summer, get the money and you know, use it to strengthen in different areas. Because if he's not going to play between now and the end of the season, there isn't much point really. Just on other additions, and Ralf Rangnick, of course, is going to put together his coaching staff and psychology coaches that we've been reading the last couple of days. He's going to bring one of those in. But also American Chris Armas is, I think, on the brink or has joined Rangnick's staff there. Was a player on MLS, coached at New York Red Bulls. I guess that's where he's interacted with Ralf Rangnick before. Mm-hmm. Rangnick gets to know him as a coach. He went up to Toronto. Yeah. Didn't last very long up there with his coaching role. But an interesting appointment and another example of he knows what he wants. He likes to work with people that he's worked with before, so they know what he wants in terms of the coaching side of it and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, great opportunity
brave, worldly, looking at it from a different point of view. He'd be a different voice. He'll come in with a different outlook. He's been part of the RB, the Red Bull kind of group that know how they play. you know, decent playing record. I think 6 caps for the US men's national team.
A midfield player, going to organise a midfield, apparently.
Yeah, and you know, he's got a decent reputation. So it's quite, I think it's refreshing to get people from different places. It's not one who's on the roundabout, has been on the English circle. Somebody brings something fresh, something different, has worked in different countries. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes and how the players, how it fits in with the players and works with the English players and obviously the level of Premier League. So yeah, it's fascinating to see how he's going to put that staff together. And I believe he's still keeping some of the old staff that Ollie had, because he says he needs to have some understanding of the club and the players and some of the history that those people can bring. So yeah, fascinating few months coming up for United. It's interesting, next two games, Rob, they're away at Norwich and away at Brentford. Chance really to go and get 6 points there and all of a sudden kick off his era ahead of the Christmas run in and then into the new year.
Yeah, they've got, even beyond that, Rob, I haven't got the list with me, but it's like they've got like six or seven. There's a lot. There's a lot of games this winnable. I think West Ham chucked in there, which are not easy, but there's some good ones in there. Okay, let's move it on, Rob, to Liverpool, who end up being perfect in their group. Six wins from six in Group B. Went to Milan that needed a win. And again, we go back, you said it earlier on, where the state of La Liga, you know, it makes you think of the state of Serie A when AC Milan are top of the league table, home in the San Siro, needing a result. And we're awful. We're awful. I mean, Liverpool played a much changed team. Young lads. Some of the youth guys came up and did great. Interesting, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah started the game, Rob. Yeah. Origi played. Tyler Morton was excellent in the middle of holding in midfield. Minamino played. Oxlade-Chamberlain. Nico Williams. Nat Phillips. Konate, the new centre-back, going through the team. Tsimikas, I guess, and Alisson in the goal. I just couldn't believe how comfortable Liverpool were and dominated the game almost from start to finish. 2-1. Could have been more than that. I just couldn't believe. I know Zlatan is a 40-year-old legendary striker. Maybe that tells you everything. Like a 40-year-old striker. I mean, he was slower than we ever remember. Held up the game. Tried his. I was so disappointed with Milan again. A little bit like earlier on when we used to sing the teams that used to be. And in this game, of course, in the European competition against Liverpool, amazing history. But wow, I couldn't believe how poor Milan were.
Well, when you look at the six wins and the dominance of Liverpool in the group, you know, Spanish winners, you know, weren't even in contention. Serie A, powerhouse, AC Milan and Portuguese, you know, not even in the running, you know, Liverpool doing it. And I can afford to almost play a B team in the second leg and dominate at the San Siro. I'll tell you what my big thought, again, watching the match and then hearing and watching Jurgen Klopp after, Rob, was a conversation we had week one, I think, or pre-season of this league starting. And you sort of said you weren't sure about Liverpool's hunger. Like, are they still as hungry? Can they dig as deep? You were kind of...
Can they go again?
That was your big question. Yeah. Like, and I think you'd mentioned you spoke to... sat down with Jordan Henderson and he was a bit like, yeah, we can do it.
Yeah.
I think the evidence of this last week, the late win at Wolves and the victory in Milan tells me that this group are hungry again. This group have got back to that hunger. You know, they could afford to have lost. There was like the Chelsea game tonight. There was nothing necessary to gain. Yes, it's great to have the record and the six straight wins, but yeah, for all intents and purposes, they're through, they're done and dusted. But it's not about that. It's Mo Salah getting his 20 goals, isn't it? It's a young kid, Tyler Monk, coming in and dominating midfield for the whole game, not even coming off. I thought Oxlade-Chamberlain, Rob.
Yeah, he's coming into it, isn't he?
Coming into it a little bit. Well, he's starting to rely on his body again. He's not worried about every challenge that's going to be him out for a few weeks. You know, I thought Phillips and Konate at the back were important. To get them minutes and get them through games. If they do need to, you know, there was a time when Van Dijk needed a rest after that time he's had out. And Matip, you can afford to, you know, you've got to bring in players who are confident. You know, the Cruyff turn by Matt Phillips, by the way, is enough for himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's match winning in itself and sends Ibra going out for a cup of tea. I just felt it was another spirited performance that answers the question. I don't think we should be asking again, are they going to be hungry? Whether they can win Champions League, Premier League, whatever. The definite hunger is back in this football club.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. And they look like they want another special season. And I think, we, like you said, we saw that at Wolves, the celebration afterwards. And this is just, you know, I saw a few comments on the local broadcast here, Rob. I think it was those guys talking about whether we underappreciate the squad at Liverpool. You know, this is going away to the San Siro, to Milan, who are top of Serie A. And they controlled the game, won the game quite comfortably. And this is all squad players, not all, but mostly squad players. And, you know, like we talk about the squad at Man City and other teams. And I thought it was an interesting point and probably a valid point that look at Divock Origi, another player that he gets another goal. He's so useful. He gets on, just does his job every week. I'm sure he doesn't complain. He gives everything. He's still in great shape, by the way. For a player that doesn't play that many first team minutes, Rob, I don't see him breathing out of his backside. I don't see him bent over, flipping, struggling to keep up with games. He's in good shape. And he gets important goals. Another goal today. He would be a really good striker for many other Premier League teams that need that position. But right now, there's no way he's going to go anywhere, of course. But, yeah, more credit for him and the other players. Mo Salah and Sadio Mane came off, I think, was it midway through the second half they came off, I think, to give them guys a bit of a break. They've got a lot of form coming up over the next few months. But, no, absolutely right. No, impressive squad and a good win.
Yeah, and he's getting a few kids in there, wasn't he? It was also Conor Bradley and Max Waltman. He gave those a couple of minutes. Obviously, Morton in the middle of the field was really impressive. England under 21 international just looked like he was comfortable in the big arena, big players, wanted the ball, defended well when they didn't have it. I just thought it was a really good all-round performance. It was interesting, Jurgen Klopp said, you know, how proud he was of this group. I think they had 21 shots, Rob, during the game in the San Siro with a team that's probably, you know, we could say a reserve team. The other game in this group, mate, was interesting because it was Porto versus Atleti at Porto, and Atletico Madrid, as we know, are always a difficult team to play. I mean, this one had a bit of everything. I think Suarez went off early, Atletico 1-0 up. Then they get a set player off. Atleti get a player off. There's an absolute brawl where everybody seemed to be getting involved. It almost felt to me like the perfect Atleti Simeone win. Street fighters finding a way to get it done.
Yeah, it's Consensau, isn't it? The coach of Porto. Yeah. And afterwards, he had him in a huddle. I think he's saying the same thing. They just got done. They collapsed. They lost their heads, diving in on the sideline when the guy gets sent off again. I mean, I think some of those, the referee in that case was a bit like, wow, you know, are you sure about that? But just the fact they needed a draw, I think it was, right. They just needed a draw going into this game at home against the Atleti team that has been very much up and down, but fought and scrapped. You know, I think you could see from Simeone afterwards what it meant to him to get through. And talk about a guy that somehow manages to push the buttons of his players every single season. When they've heard the same thing, they've seen the same antics, they've seen the same crazes from the sideline, but he still manages to get a tune out of them. They're in the round of 16. Porto got done. They got out-scrapped, out-fought, whatever it was.
By the way, you wouldn't want to face them, would you? To be honest.
No, you wouldn't
want to face them.
No chance. Not over two legs. No, they're grinders. They absolutely grind you. They fight you. You got him jumping around the sideline with the referee and everything else. So, I don't know. I'd like to see him in the round of 16. Sometimes he frustrates me, winds me up when the way he carries on. But listen, you respect the results, and they found a way to do it. I think I didn't expect them to go through, given what they needed, but they did it. Two guys sent off for Porto, one for Atletico Madrid. I think that's how it ended up. But Atletico Madrid are through to the next round. That was a drama of the day, wasn't it, that game?
Yeah, absolutely. I heard our good friend Steve Nicol, actually, said, you were mispassed. I hate Atleti. I hate Simeone. I hate the way they do it. And, you know, but Steve, and you kind of think, I understand exactly what he's saying.
Yeah, totally.
You have to take your hat off to them. You know, it's about, are they in the knockout stages of the Champions League? Round of 16, yes, they are. And nobody will want to face them, Mike.
And Liverpool, and for Stephen Nicol, Liverpool won't have to face them in the next round. They're in the same group, so they won't have to play them now. We'll see who they get in the draw. I mean, I always think that the knockout stage, mate, and the draw on Monday, I don't think it gets much better. It doesn't get much better in football, really, for me. The Champions League, in this knockout tournament, starts again in February, is it? I think it is. Is going to be fun to watch. But no, well done, Liverpool. Yeah. Really, really, really great qualifying with a potential tricky group. But got the job done very, very comfortably.
And we'll jump on our midweek podcast next week, which will probably be December the 15th, but probably Wednesday, December the 15th. We'll review those knockout games, mate, and see who gets who and who might have a
well, I think we're doing it on the 16th. I think I'm doing it on the 16th for Thursday 15th. For some reason. Oh, okay. Yeah.
We'll look, I think. Wednesday or Thursday, keep an eye out. Yeah, we'll drop the potty and we'll talk about the draw. Let's just go back to a game before we close up at the weekend. Everton facing Arsenal at Goodison Park. Everton, no wins in eight coming into the game. Mossa Brandt had been, as mutually, we believe, left the football club, which put a little bit of spotlight on Rafa Benitez and his team. And at 1-0 down with not that long to go, you're wondering whether this was all going to turn a bit sour for Everton. There was talk about a walkout after 27 minutes. It wasn't too much in some respects. But Everton got the job done. Tomorrow game with a lovely finish, a last-minute strike to win the game for Everton. That almost makes it feel a little bit better. So I take a little bit of pressure off Rafa now in Everton. And you know, from Arsenal's point of view, things just starting to go a little bit flatter after being on a good run of form themselves.
Yeah, I think it does take a bit of pressure off Rafa. I think my main thoughts on this game is Everton as a club and as a fan base. You know, they now have got some spirit, the team and the fans. I mean, they've not been a good run, but Rafa and his team are fighting, because everybody's said what they said about them and where they are on the league table. It's been incredibly disappointing, and all the doom and gloom starts again and the frustrated fans. But it's not for the want of trying, is it, from this team? Yeah. And for the fans, it's not from the want of wanting their team to do well. They've been tortured over many, many years now. And then you get the highs and the lows and the hope and then the disappointments. But I've got to love the spirit of the team and the spirit of the club and this fight in the manager and the fight in the players. I thought that was what shone through to me. And if it's one thing that maybe Arsenal lack, is that spirit, is that fight, is that desire to get over problems. So I thought it was really good. Richarlison, I thought, led the line really well. Of course, the two goals that are offside. One's like incredibly tight.
Toenails.
I mean, we're not seeing that in the Champions League, Rob. There was at least one today that's like, is he offside? That could be
Timo
tight.
Werner. And it just goes. Werner, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, with Werner. Yeah. Well, I thought, well, that could be. Yeah. You know, the Premier League, then we'd be getting all the little lines out. You know, they're like, no, he's all right. He's good. Let's carry on. Much better. So that was frustrating for Richarlison, but he does finally get his goal. Odegaard took his goal really well, I thought, for Arsenal. Yeah. I think for Arsenal, Rob, I think there's one question for Arsenal. Do they have a striker problem?
They have an Aubameyang problem. So if that answers your question, they have an Aubameyang problem.
And Nketiah good enough? Lacazette good enough to be a regular scorer? That's what I'm saying.
Nketiah probably would deserve a chance. I'm not sure at this stage we'd say yes. Lacazette reminds me a bit of Martial. Like, potentially you think these 15 to 20 goals, but I'm not sure you ever really realise them. Is Martinelli? Does Martinelli deserve a run in the way they're going to play? I mean, the point I was going to make, Rob, it was a little bit about this, and I was thinking about a couple of other clubs with City. Because of Pep and because of the way we're doing, do we always have to think now of a centre forward? Can we not think of a different type player that brings 10 to 12 goals, but goals come from other areas of the pitch? I think we keep going down this, right? You know, who's their 15, 20 goal a season, man? Who's their striker? Not every team has to have one. Maybe Arsenal are a similar team that, you know.
If you don't have one, though, Rob, if you don't have one, and I hear your point.
Yeah.
You've got to design your team to attack in different ways so lots of other players do get the chance to score. And that's what Pep's done so well. All his midfield players are getting to the box.
Well, could Mikel, you know, this Aubameyang and whatever, like, let's sell him then. Let's get him off the wage bill. And I'm not sure if Martinelli's a guy who might not at the moment, you know, if he did well, might hit 12. But if you could then get Saka getting goals, Odegaard getting goals, Smith Rowe getting goals, maybe a couple from midfield, centre backs from the odd fullback who both can get forward. Is there a different way of doing it than just almost like, because to get the centre forward who's going to get you the 15, 20 goals is going to cost you 50, 60, 70 million.
So coach them differently, Rob.
Yeah.
Coach them differently. Different systems, different methodologies, different responsibilities for players. You've got to get in the box on this angle. Yeah. But that's a good point. It's a good point. And coaching-wise, we've seen it with Pep. And I know he's got great midfield players there, but he definitely finds a way for them for players to get in scoring positions and you know, encouraging players to get in there. And it's a way of going. I still think Aubameyang's, I still like him. I still respect his finishing ability. I know.
There's too many issues, though, Robin.
I know.
Eventually, there's too many issues with him. And I don't know what's going on, and we don't hear it all. But eventually, him not doing it on the pitch causes you too many issues. With a young group who need him, you know, I think it might be time to move on.
My last thought on Arsenal, Rob, before we kind of wrap up a little bit.
Yeah.
I still like where they're at. I feel like there's a different, strong, new foundation, and there's going to be little issues, strike or different spots in the team. Yeah. But they're in a different place now. There's some like consistency with the goalkeeper in the back four, and the midfield options are pretty good. Xhaka came in for this game to play alongside Thomas Partey. Yeah. So it's not the things are going to implode.
There's going to be things now.
Right, yeah. It's not going to be easy to get. In that top four, that's for sure.
Granit's back. He'll bring us a bit of drama, don't you? Right. Like that.
Yeah, he will.
Before we finish up, mate, we've got to talk about, obviously, over in the UK at the moment, COVID-19 seems to be hitting again as we hit the winter months. And obviously, at Tottenham, there's been a bit of an issue. I think they've had the Conference League game now postponed against Rennes, or is it called off at the moment?
It's just not going to go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't know what that means, whether it will be played or whether they'll look at results and see whether Spurs need to play that game. And then the game against Brighton at the weekend's already been postponed, hasn't it, I believe?
I don't know if it has yet, has it? I know we're close to that point. I don't think it's been postponed yet, but I expect it. I mean, what's it? Eight players and five staff. He said there was.
I saw something recently. They closed down the training ground as well today. So I mean, I can't really see how that one's going to go. But maybe at this stage, we'll keep an eye out on that over the next couple of days. But just a slight worry, Rob, that this might start to be happening again. I think these seven Leicester players are out for the Napoli game due to COVID-19 as well in the Europa League for Leicester's point of view. Big game for Leicester as well in Napoli.
Yeah, it's got to be a concern, mate. I mean, just for Spurs as well. Remember that the game against Burnley away, postponed with bad weather and the snow and stuff. So we could have a difficult fixture situation. And bigger picture, I don't even want to think about it. You know, I don't even want to think about it. The numbers, we get the numbers every week from the Premier League who test positive, and they're starting to get quite high. They're starting to get quite high, these numbers, which makes us, me and you and everybody at NBC, a little nervous about, you know, fans and stuff, they're going to start being, I don't want to even think about it, but we got to be a bit, I'm worried about it. I'll be honest with you. We had this, I think last year, Rob, when the numbers went up again, but nothing really changed. So thankfully it didn't, but it's got to be a concern. Two clubs now, you know, with all this travel of European travel and international games travel,
variant. There's a lot of games coming up in the midweek games, a lot of interaction between players and fans.
The holiday period, there's so many games over December, January.
And guess what? As ever in these situations, I think December 16th, Tottenham play Leicester. So, you know, two teams who've got it really badly.
The youth teams playing.
We'll keep an eye out on that. Hopefully things will pick up and, we'll manage to continue the games as we go into this really busy, important Christmas period. That's it for this week, mate. We've got all the English teams. We're through in the Champions League knockout stage. We've got some kind of different performances, some different results. We'll see what the knockout draw brings on Monday, and if the likes of Chelsea will be punished for their sloppiness today, finishing second in Group H. We'll be back on Sunday, December the 12th, when we call match week 16th in the Premier League. So we get to the busy time now of the festive games. But for now, I'm Ilk. He's Musty, together with two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, be healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.